the lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story, which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
Welcome back, dear audience. You are listening to Lantern, and we are talking about the concept of difficulties in our religion. Well, viewing difficulties as a source of love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala changes the believer's outlook on life. Something might be harmful, but he views it as a temporary difficulty and transforms it into an eternal blessing. By being patient, when is he or she afflicted with something, they know that this affliction is actually good in the end. You may dislike something although it is good for you, or like something although it is bad for you. God knows and you don't know. And finally, everyone is challenged in life at some level. We are all equal in that regard, and no one can escape both having and not having in some respect. Where we differ is in our attitude and perception of these events. The Holy Book of Quran reshapes the human mind to not view wealth, fame, and materialistic luxury as sources of happiness and God's pleasure. Rather, they can, in fact, lead to misery and sadness. Happiness is found in the attitude of being pleased with God's decree and being near to Him. And finally, I want to end this episode with this elegant hadith from Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam, which says, "You are not believers unless you are trusted by the people. Count calamities as blessings and consider easy life as a calamity, since perseverance in the face of a calamity is better than well-being while having an easy life. So we should keep strong in case of any hardship and thank God for it, and in that way, win His pleasure and attention." Okay, dear listeners, thank you very much for listening to this episode of Lantern. And until another one, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the physically impaired helper. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to A to Z here on Iron Bingish Radio with me, Sister Zainab. And obviously it's a slightly long title. And so what am I referring to in particular? So I'm going to refer first of all to just a sort of anecdote from life of one of the martyrs of the Holy Defense, by the name of Hossein Shah Yestefar. So he had, like many martyrs, he had actually sustained serious injuries at the front, so he was... But however, even though he had been sort of severely injured and he actually found walking difficult, he still insisted on doing most of the shopping for his wife. And not only that, he would also help her with the housework. So obviously just sort of picture this to yourselves, because obviously we... maybe some of you have been in that situation where you're not so mobile and yet you still want to help. Some people have maybe been in the situation where they're not so mobile and they really they just can't. They just cannot physically do anything, even to get out the door, just even if it's just literally a few meters walk down to a shop, and even that they can't do. But obviously, so for this martyr, so for the spouse to be pushing himself, somehow coping with this, still doing this, making this physical effort to help his wife. Because, of course, we know that in Islam, a woman isn't obliged to do any of the housework, though in reality, most women will sort of happily do it anyway. But obviously, he, despite his injuries, wanted to help out so much. So obviously, this is a high level of selflessness. To some extent, most likely also sort of putting up with a degree of pain. But obviously there's another aspect in there too, which I'll mention. Welcome back to A to Z here on I Being Betrayed, with me, Sister Zainab. And so I was just talking about an anecdote from life of one of the martyrs from the Holy Defense Plenum of Hossein Chayes Defar, who, despite being injured and finding walking difficult, would still help his wife with shopping, or actually do the shopping for his wife and help with the housework. And I mentioned there's another aspect to this, and this is obviously the spouse, the martyr in this case, I suppose also just appreciating his wife and the status of his wife so much. So the, you know, appreciating the dignity and the role of the wife so much that he wanted to obviously help out and, I suppose, make her life easier. And, you know, and this idea of self-sacrifice. So have maybe some of us have been in a situation where, you know, and I would always think of the mothers who, despite illness or let's say a sort of injury, for example, I know a mother who has four children, and every so often an old injury in the foot would sort of escalate again and produce severe pain, where she really can only walk by limping, but she would still she would still try to walk her children to school, she would still be doing the chores in the house, she would still be doing the shopping and so on. Obviously, she just have to be very, very, very slow, but still do this. And, you know, so that's just one example of many mothers, obviously, are like that. But then, obviously, we have, you know, the husbands, the fathers might also behave like that. Other family members might also do that. And, you know, so the idea is that, you know, we sort of go over and above ourselves to help, even if, you know, at times it's not easy for us. And that not being easy could just be maybe we don't have that much time. Maybe we're really busy, but maybe we just want to go over and above to help others, and just give them our time. If we've got nothing else to give, at least give time, even if it is a bit of an inconvenience for us. So inshallah, these are reminders for us, and you know, how else we can improve ourselves. And I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on I'm Being Betrayed Radio, and farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
traveler, just as they were, walking the world, thinking of the past on an earth so vast, waiting to return. Just to know you, whoever you are, laugh with you, learn from you, open to you my heart. But soon when I say goodbye and move on, I'm a traveler just as they were, walking the world, thinking of the past on an earth so vast, waiting to return. While I'm here, I will always try to be.
While I'm here, I will always try to be.
The kind of neighbor who prays for you and me.
The kind of neighbor who prays for you and me.
Here for you,
here for you.
A shoulder to, turn to. I'm a traveler, just as they were, walking the world, thinking of the past on an earth so vast, waiting to return, waiting to return. Pleasure to know you, I've learned so much.
Been a pleasure to know you, I've learned so much.
Pray for you, hope to meet you, my heart you have touched.
Pray for you, hope to meet you, my heart you have touched.
Remember me, so I might be with you. I'm a traveler, just as they were,
walking
the world, thinking of the past on an earth so vast, waiting to return, waiting to return, waiting to return, return to my
from Tehran, the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, a very warm welcome to all our listeners far and near. We are in the studio of Iran Radio with a full slate of engaging content, meaningful dialogue, and stories that stay with you long after the broadcast ends. So wherever you are, make yourself at home. You're just getting started. First, you'll hear more of our expertly crafted radio productions. Next is Youth Station. Following that, we bring you powerful insights from leaders' speech. Listen to English translations of selected statements and speeches by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution on various occasions, a source of profound wisdom. Then join us as we go round the world with reporters. Our correspondents from across the globe will bring you fascinating reports on a variety of subjects from their regions, offering a unique global perspective. So don't go anywhere. Up next is another segment of our radio productions.
She heard the explosions, but instead of running for her life, she stayed put, calm and composed, to broadcast the message that shook the world. Welcome to today's program, where we have with us that messenger, that Iranian journalist and anchor Sahar Emami, to find out where that powerful message came from and how.
آنچه که ملاحظه کردید، صدایی که شنیدید، فضای غبارآلود استادیوم.
Now, on the day of the explosion, you had heard warnings about potential terrorist attacks on the IRIB. Now, what made you decide to stay that day, and what happened?
You know something, I'm only used to asking my questions, not answering them, so it's kind of difficult. I've never taken any classes on anchorship and presenting. I've always told my colleagues that when the red tally light is turned on, it feels as though I'm no longer in complete control of my words. As a presenter, you know that one needs to focus and study. I too study a lot. I'm in a news environment and I'm updated with news and events that occur on a daily, weekly, and monthly basis. In all these years, I've always tried to stay up to date. In regards to what happened that day, if you paid attention, I was reciting a statement. I'm talking about this for the first time. I was in the middle of reciting a statement live on the news channel, and when the first explosion happened, I didn't stop. I finished reciting the statement, as was my media responsibility as a professional, and since I understood that I should not cause concern in the hearts of my audience. I felt as though a transcendent power was guiding me through it, something beyond one's imagination. We're all soldiers of media. We're all ready to serve our duty in various situations, just like fighters in the battleground, and lead the way in the news and information arena. You know that at such times, your voice and demeanor becomes stronger. That day, I felt as though with every explosion that I heard, I was becoming stronger than before. At the time, we had been warned for our safety and accommodations were arranged. My manager was also one of the few present in the control room. The security warnings had already been issued by those in charge. At the same time, we were supposed to broadcast live with the next guest moments later. The station's manager told us that from that moment on, all of us had the choice to immediately evacuate the building, and it was not up to him to instruct us to stay. He said, "Make up your minds fast." At that moment, I imagined the story I had been told since my very childhood. The moment in which Imam Hussein creates a condition for his companions to leave him alone in Karbala and save their own lives. That story gave me the strength to say that I will stay. When the people's representative, Dr. Manon Raisi, heard this, he said, "Well, if you stay, I will also stay, as I'm a representative of the people and I should also stay by your side." Mrs. Abedini also stayed on the other side, and so did my other colleague, Mr. Saderi. When the program started, they handed me the statement. Since the statement was a picture of the original and not quite clear, I stumbled a couple of times. My manager told me that we'd come back to the statement moments later so that I recited perfectly. I don't remember at which point, but as I was reciting the statement, the first attack took place. First explosion, then the second, then the third, and then you saw what happened. I believe having been able to carry on like that was a result of God's mercy on me, as He's blessed me with faith. And as a result of the spiritual support and prayers of Lady Fatima, the daughter of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, to whom I owe everything I have in my life. And I'm very grateful that the result was dignified.
So you have a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old. So one would think that as a mom, you would immediately rush back home when there was any danger to make sure that you could stick around to raise your kids.
من باید الگویی باشم برای بچه‌هام.
It's my duty to serve as a role model for my kids. Over the years, whenever we were at a sensitive situation, I've appeared on camera stronger than other times because I believe that my power, my resolve, and my courage should serve as a model for young women watching me. My hijab, my modesty should serve as a model for young women who are perhaps on the verge of choosing their path. I've always tried to serve as a strong mother for my children. I've never told them not to cry, but I've taught them to be strong and brave. I've taught them to stand up in the face of oppression. You're saying that as a mother at the time, I should have gone with my motherly instincts. But at the time, I told myself that I should give them a lasting lesson. If I'm not around one day, they should be able to be proud of their mother and the decisions she made at the time.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, about what you wanted to do growing up, and who you looked up to?
I very much like my job. At the time of the incident, part of what happened as a result could be attributed to my passion for my job. I was one of those who achieved her childhood dreams. I had wanted to have this job, and then I got it. In the years that I was busy pursuing my career, I also got married, and with my husband's support, I was able to progress in my job despite all the events that may prevent one from success, thanks to the patience and the support of my husband and my parents. I moved from the social realm to the news realm, and I arrived at a position in which I had to serve as a constant example of a Muslim Iranian woman. I tried to always appear with power to show that a woman can be both a mother with all of her emotions and a media soldier with all of her strength. I have never placed limitations on myself. Neither my marriage nor my religion has limited me. Of course, I accept certain rules and structures. It's true that within the Islamic framework and in social interactions, I can accept certain rules, but I don't call them limitations. They have not limited me from having a career as a presenter. I was able to both be a mother and work and be socially active and travel for work while maintaining my modest cover. I've never experienced what you call a limitation. I've been able to be active and work alongside my colleagues as a woman with complete respect and dignity. I believe the women who saw this image were influenced by seeing this way of life. Women I've met from different ages and different walks of life, women from whom I've learned and to whom I've taught a thing or two as well. I'm glad that while fulfilling my role as a mother and an employee, and in the way that I cover and carry myself, I've served as a role model for many.
To mainstream media, a woman like you is an example of submission, submitting to your religion, submitting to the will of your husband, submitting to the Islamic Republic of Iran that you work for. And so can you tell me where this submission leads, that at some point you're the one who's calling the shots?
I disagree. When it comes to my husband's opinion, of course, at times I simply agree with him, and at times we discuss until we reach an agreement together. At the IRIB, I work in a system where at times I tell my managers what needs to be done and they accept my suggestions. I live in a country where much of the time, much of the decisions have been made by women who discussed, insisted, and created a solution. I live and work in a country where women are very much respected, both as mothers at home and as employees at work. They can express their opinions, reach agreements, and call the shots. Also, if you study the history of Iran and its women, about which I suggest that more content is made for the international audience, you'll learn about Iranian women who spoke up in defense of the truth and for the sake of justice. That was not my voice alone. It was the voice of all Iranian women who had for long spoken up in support of the oppressed, for the people of Palestine and Lebanon, and all those who had for long been subjugated by colonizers. The voice of all dignified women throughout Iran's history and that of the world as well.
There were a lot of reactions about your coverage that day. Can you tell us about some of those reactions that stood out to you more?
I have a page on Instagram, and it was interesting for me to see the feedback of my audiences. Some liked a post about my child and wrote that he should be proud of his mother. Many were Iranian expats. They may not have liked my beliefs in the past or may have disliked the way I cover, but it seemed as though what happened brought together people with different opinions and from different backgrounds, like a non-Muslim woman from abroad praising me as a Shia Iranian woman. What happened brought together all those who understood the love for one's country, even those who had felt alienated as a result of political disputes. To me, political disputes are like disputes among family members. These disputes exist in every family and makes the family members grow as individuals. But when the family is threatened by an external enemy, it's beautiful how all the members stand together. And these family members, regardless of their social and political backgrounds, left me heartwarming comments and made me feel that the strength I chose to display that day on air helped people connect with us in defense of our country and all those who fight for it.
Western media has generally connected the phrase Allahu Akbar, or God is the greatest, to terrorist attacks. But you chanted Allahu Akbar at the time where you were attacked. Can you tell us what the significance of that phrase is to you and why you used it?
در ذهن من محکومیت تجاوز بود.
To me, chanting this phrase meant condemning the violations. I wanted to tell our audience that what's happening here is a clear example of injustice. And the phrase, God is the greatest of all, to me was a condemnation of the injustice we faced. Over the years, we heard so much from our audience in different social interactions, and we don't always know how to clarify certain matters from lesser important news to major ones. I had, for instance, heard and myself covered the news of Gaza, but I had never imagined the building I worked in would be hit. When I heard the explosions, it was as though I found the answer for all that had happened in those days for all those who, perhaps, could not really grasp the matter. I wanted to show that it's the concept of God being the greatest that empowers our fighters in the battleground, that it's the chant of innocent women and children who were violated and killed by the enemies. It's the cry of everyone, including those in media, who has been a victim of injustice. It's a call that can unite men and women, young and old. A family sent me a clip of their 2-year-old trying to imitate that scene by chanting Allahu Akbar over and over again. It brought me tears of joy to see how phrases I chanted with power because of a belief I hold had had that influence. I wanted my audience to see the injustice we faced. We had never started a war. We had said time and again that we had not wanted a war, that we were people of peace, a nation of debate and diplomacy, but we were violated nevertheless. We lost 3- and 6-month-old babies. We lost pregnant women. In that Allahu Akbar, I wanted to confirm the injustice that had taken place, including to those in media who had done nothing but inform and educate people.
As a media person, what was it about what you did that caused fear in the hearts of those who bombed you?
ما کاری نمی کردیم. ما چیزی نداریم. ما تمام تجهیزاتمون خودکار کاغذ.
We hadn't done anything wrong. We had nothing but pens and paper. Those are the only tools of our job. After the building was hit, I turned around and saw a scene that I found very moving. Right there on the shattered glass, news scripts had been scattered everywhere. Scripts for 2 p.m., 4 p.m., 8 a.m. What do we have aside from these? We have cameras that have always been used to cover the reality on the ground. We have journalists who have always tried to reflect the reality. We don't have much but the papers and monitors and equipment to write and edit. My colleagues have broadcasted various images in the last few days. Notes from a journalist, paper, what else was there? Nothing. From the beginning of the Zionist aggression that is from the dawn of June 13, 2025, we started a special coverage in which we'd discuss and analyze the different aspects of the events. Of course, we reflected the power of Iran, the True Promise operation, which was reflected in the world media more and more by the hour. What was happening was the reflection of the dignity of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the power of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and the strength of its soldiers in the media as well.
There are various international organizations that are charged with human rights, women's rights, journalist rights. Now, as an Iranian woman who actually went through that experience, have you seen any reaction, any condemnation from those international organizations in the last few days?
Let's look at your question in terms of these words, women, children, and human rights. how much of the violation of their rights was reflected in Gaza, in Lebanon, and in many countries that were victims of violation and injustice. Have any of these violations and attacks been truly condemned? And if there were condemnations, have they really been effective? I used to always ask the guests at our programs a question like what you asked. I'd ask why international organizations and conventions charged with protecting human rights and having taken on that mission are silent in the face of violations of these rights. And once they speak up, why do they only condemn and no practical steps are taken to stop the aggression? I want to say that which was supposed to be done and was not, was overlooked not only in our case, but it's always been overlooked across the world. These simple and passing condemnations have always been there.
So as you said, Sahar Emami doesn't believe that the secret to actually resistance against oppression is negotiations with the U.S. or, you know, appealing to international organizations. So what does Sahar Emami tell people? What would Sahar Emami tell people the secret to resistance is?
It's a heart.
Unity, forming alliances, solidarity. If you have a small circle, it can be broken. But together, these circles can form a chain to stop injustice. Together, we can stop any and all injustice and oppression. There has been some improvements. In the past few years that I've been following international work, I've seen the improvements in how nations have been awakened, whose regimes were terrified of their awakening, and they had spent large sums of money to create a generation that would never stand on our side, on the side of the people of Gaza, on the side of Iran's ideals. But despite all their efforts, there were very positive developments. Despite all of these crimes and violations of human rights, we witnessed movements in the heart of America. We witnessed how in the UN, which in many cases was completely silent about the crimes in Gaza, the Zionist regime was called a child-killing regime. We saw that the International Court of Justice condemned the Israeli regime and issued an international verdict for them. These are positive developments. Countries that we didn't expect stood with their nations as they could no longer resist their pressure. And some nations and their leaders stood together for values that belong to the world. Those entities can no longer repeat their heinous deeds. It's true that they have their own supporters, but even those supporters, in my opinion, as someone who's studying international affairs, secretly believe that their end is near because they cannot resist in the face of this awakening, the second wave of which we're witnessing. We had already witnessed protests in the heart of the UK, widespread protests. What brought them about? In Germany, France, and the heart of America, university protests in the US. What caused this? The same events continued until in a new wave, more solidarity was shown. Across the world, the flag of the Islamic Republic was waved even in many European countries, a flag which those people had never waved before. So what made this happen for them to stand with us? I believe it was seeing these violations. Nothing can hide the truth. Nothing can silence the voice of truth. If at a time it does, the truth will later prevail louder and stronger than before. Because in the end, victory is with the truth, and with the countries that don't stand for violation and transgression and oppression.
And thank you very much for sharing with us your message of resistance. And we very much enjoyed sharing this account with you. Stay mindful and spread the message.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamic.
Islamic.
Allah, my Lord.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. السلام علیکم to all of you, dear listeners of IRIV English Radio. Welcome to another episode of Youth Station, where today, this is Nahid, having the honor of being with you, and here I have the honor of being with my very dear friend.
Asma is here with you, so the honor goes both ways. I'm so happy to be here as well.
Same here, so much.
And for the listeners, I hope wherever you are, you're doing so well, and everything is just so good.
Yeah, in the month of Muharram, everything goes well. Muslims and their hearts, mm-hmm. we can say everything goes well.
Yeah, you know, interestingly, for the people who've been living in a place like everything shouts out that, okay, this is the month of Muharram, maybe it will be different from the people who do not have the same experience.
Yeah.
Like, when we say that this month, maybe the strangers, like the people who have not been into this culture, I call them stranger in this way, not in another way. For those people who are actually unfamiliar with this environment, maybe that sounds okay, like, this is the month of mourning, this is the month of crying.
Yeah, a sad
Why do
month.
You like it? Like, is there anybody in their right and sound and sense who would say that, mm-hmm. okay, this is an interesting month, this is a lovely month, this is the month that we have so
it's
much
all
of memories.
Sad. Why are you happy that it's reaching
But
you?
I did not know that it's all about nostalgia, and it's all about all the memories that it starts from your childhood. Like, the first time we started to see this, you know, these are these very special fabrics that have been embroidered by the pictures of Ashura and of the month of Muharram. That the memory of these fabrics, of these paintings, of everything that is related to this month goes back to the time when we were children, so much of a kiddo. And then our parents took us to all these gatherings, and then in there we started to build friendship with other
kids. Yeah, we've been raised
with
these ideas, these beliefs, and with these traditions of the holy month of Muharram.
Yeah. So, you know, the fundamental question of today's episode is that, is really every land Karbala and every day is Ashura?
I was too proud to see the truth and prostrate to you until I took the first step, and that's when you opened the doors for me. Now alone, I realize what I was missing.
Right now, I do believe that in today's world, after all these wars and after all these calamities and miseries that people are suffering from, I do believe that now this sentence is much more relatable.
Yeah.
Yeah, like we see it right now. Maybe up until 20 years ago, we would have asked ourselves this question in those gatherings of Muharram that how brutal those animals, I can't even call them animals because, you know, it's only the predator who would do such a thing. But then right now, do we ask ourselves the same question? No.
No, we can see many samples around. Just look around the world. You can see many samples of the same characters, even worse.
Even worse. Because, you know, modernity comes, then they have much more facilities, equipment. They are well equipped to kill people brutally and actually do not feel anything about it.
Yeah, and you know, in the past when we were asked how can every land be Karbala and how can every day be Ashura, we would have thought about it. We would have gone searching for the different samples so that we can prove what we are thinking about. But today it's much simpler since
it's an open book in front of you.
Yeah, and there is no saying that I do not have to explain it for anyone.
Yeah, exactly. For us, like for us who've been raised based on this ideology that every land is Karbala and every day is Ashura, I guess now everything is much more clarified.
Yeah, and it's really deep. We cannot simply say, okay, every day is Ashura, so Imam Hussein was fighting for the sake of just this name of Ashura to stay there so that years later, kids and Adanob families would have been mourning for the sake of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. But as he himself had mentioned in one of the ahadith, he said, "I did not rise up for power nor for corruption. I rose to reform the nation of my grandfather." The same is happening in the world today. The same
Very
is happening
true.
In the Islamic countries, namely Lebanon. The same is happening for the nation of the grandfather of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, for the traditions of Prophet, for the teachings of Islam, for those deep, meaningful senses of Islam. We are seeing the war again against Islam and against the true Islam. And we have the other side, the other people, let's say, the
yeah.
other nations, the other groups.
You rightly actually mentioned the name of Lebanon, but that's not the only country who's suffering.
No.
Like, you see, Palestine for so many years.
You know, I guess all Islamic countries are fighting a battle in their own way. I mean,
yeah.
we do.
But, and unfortunately, those Islamic countries who are not suffering from any battle, they're staying silent.
Yeah.
And their silence is helping the predator to be even more courageous in
yeah.
doing brutal stuff.
Even some of them, unfortunately, are taking the side of the enemies.
Unfortunately. You know, we want to dissect different parts of this quote that we were just talking about, but we have to go for a break, and then we come back to see what comes out of this sentence.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
You are listening to IRIB English Radio, and this is Youth Station. I'm Asma, and Nahid is with me. We're having a discussion on the saying, every land is Karbala and every day is Ashura.
Yeah.
So the point is, you know, when I thought about this sentence, ever since I was... You know, ever since the time I started to think about
yeah.
what Muharram is trying to teach me, I just come to realize that it's about choice and making side. You know,
yeah.
what happened in Ashura? It was the day of picking side.
Yeah.
You have to
choose
either
justice or injustice.
Exactly. You cannot stay in the middle and always protect yourself by not picking a side.
Yeah.
You know, there are many people who've got this as their characteristic and their strategy. It's actually their
yeah.
Tactic to work this way that, okay, I'm not going to say anything. When you ask them their ideas about something, they would walk on the edge of the eggshells without
yeah.
pointing the true feeling that they have.
But
why?
This is not going to happen.
Because this is the safe, because they feel that this is the safe side and they're walking on it and they do not want to get hurt. But you have to pick side. I guess the whole ideology of Islam is telling you that you cannot stay in the middle and be indifferent while you're seeing the injustice.
Yeah, and you know, when I just watched those TV shows that are showing, that are depicting the picture of Muharram in different countries all around the world, I can realize that this Ashura is a universal call for justice. It's a universal event that is happening.
Yeah, and honestly, after what happened these recent years, you know, this universal awakening for
yeah.
Palestinian people, for the oppressed people, made me realize that it's not just the call for the Muslim people.
No, it's for
justice.
It's
not only us shouting
yeah.
for the oppressed people. No, it's the entire world. And we come back to the words of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, that he was actually addressing the enemy and telling them that if you do not have a religion,
yeah.
then at least be free
Even
human
people
beings.
People of the other religions are
yeah.
mourning for Imam Hussein.
So we're actually hearing the voices of free souls.
Yeah.
Like what Imam Hussein alayhi salam was saying. If you do not, even if you do not belong to a religion, even if you do not see yourself as attributed to a school of
yeah.
thought, then at least be a free soul, be
yeah.
a human being. And that's what we're seeing right now. So the story of Ashura is the story that the moral of the story is that you cannot stay in the middle without doing anything.
Yeah,
and if
you
do
have
something,
your voice on.
That one thing is to pick side.
Yeah.
You either have to pick side with the enemy, with the evil, or you have to pick side with the oppressed people.
Yeah, and just standing in the middle doesn't assure or doesn't guarantee your safety.
Yeah, and why do we have to pick side? This is the future of the Earth. There is no one who could actually deny this fact that eventually we have the verse of the Holy Book of Quran that tells us the world is going to be inherited by the oppressed people.
Yeah.
Eventually, these people are going to rise up with the leadership of the last savior, and he's going to come and bring the universal peace and justice and flourish it.
Yeah, exactly.
So there is no one who would deny this.
Even on a smaller scale, we can say right now I'm living on this planet. I'm living in this earth. I'm one of the citizens of the world. So I have to be aware of what is happening. I have to take some actions. If I just sit back and say I'm not going to have any ideas,
mm-hmm.
Okay, then are you alive? Not
no, are you a human being, you know?
Yeah.
When I just look at people on Instagram or in other platforms, like in other applications, when you check people and you see their dilemmas and their concerns, you ask yourself this question that, was I born to only go to luxurious hotels or to have the best of everything in the world? Is this the ultimate goal of my life?
Yeah.
And then I know there are people, at the same time that I know that there are people living in this world and they're being attacked by heavy missiles and they're being burned while they're alive in the hospital. Who would imagine this? Like, we are living in a world in which they talk about human rights, in which they have many gatherings, NGOs, and they have so much of this, you know, associations. They advocate even animals. We have advocators of animals. But what about these children that are being killed?
And does it make me happy?
Yeah. Does it make me happy now, knowing all these things, to wear the best clothes, to actually go to the best places, to pick the best destinations?
Yeah.
Does it make me satisfied? And how am I going to put my head on the pillow? Like, you know, it's a humanitarian goal, I guess. And it does not have anything to do with your religion. It's mostly about being a human.
Yeah, and it's nothing so hard. We're not saying that everyone has to take a gun, go to the battlefield and fight. It can be so simple. Just in the society that we are, in every place that we are, we can be the flag bearers of the right.
Yeah, so the gist of today's episode was this fact that is just an ongoing concept. Like every place, every land is Karbala and every day is Ashura. From the morning that you wake up till the very night that you get home or you want to sleep, you are at a stake and you're stuck between the choices of picking the right side or the wrong side, and the decision is actually on you. You are the one who's responsible for making the decision, and it's you eventually picking side with either the right side or the wrong side. So what he wanted to tell us is that Ashura is every single moment of your life.
Yes,
because this battlefield never ends. Like, this fight between the evil and the good never ends, and you have to take an action, because if you don't, then you're so indifferent, and I don't know if you could call yourself a human being or not at that time. So yeah, this was all, and I hope you enjoyed that. Until another episode, stay healthy and take care of yourself. Wassalamu alaikum
wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that, inshallah, in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum
warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
Thank you.
is heavy, my hands are weak, my goals have perished, or I'm in need. My soul is empty, I need to find. How do we spend these days and lonely nights? In my sojourn, I call to you to ease this hardship, this journey I was put. Source of hope, you see my tears and how they fall. I feel the greatness of your love. Please have mercy on my soul, oh Allah. In my sujood, I call to you to ease this hardship.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
The woman who led to the survival of the biggest suppression countering movement in history. January 7th, 2015. Oppressors and tyrants wanted to eliminate the event of the Husseini Ashura, but Zainab al-Kubra, God's greetings be upon her, did not allow that to happen. Our Lady Zainab al-Kubra made two moves in order to do this. One was made during her capture and her transfer to Kufa and Sham, where she made illuminating and enlightening speeches. The other move was making a pilgrimage to Karbala in Arba'in. This was either the first or second Arba'in. This move means that we should not allow the malevolent motives which intend to erase dear, influential, and important heirs from memories to be successful. Of course, they will not be successful. As long as nations are alive, as long as truthful tongues speak, and as long as religious hearts are motivated, they will not be able to erase these errors and events, as they have not been successful until today. It is a glorious panorama in history which has been presented to the entire humanity. Imam Hussein alayhi salam prepared himself for such a day. Of course, the entire 50-plus year life of Hussein ibn Ali alayhi salam is a lesson. His childhood is a lesson. His youth is a lesson. His behavior during his imamate is a lesson. and his behavior after the martyrdom of Imam Hassan alayhi salam is a lesson. It was not the case that Imam Hussein's responsibility was confined to the last day. However, the event of Karbala enjoys such greatness and brightness that like a sun, it overshadows all the other lights. Why are the martyrs of Karbala the masters of the martyrs throughout history? June 12, 2013. Many people were martyred in the way of God and alongside the Holy Prophet, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, and the Commander of Faithful, alayhi salam, and divine prophets. But none of these events is comparable to the event of Karbala. There's a difference between a person who enters the arena with the praise and encouragement of friends and companions and with a hope of victory and who is martyred in such conditions, and a person who enters the arena in a dark and gloomy world, while not only do all the great personalities of the world of Islam refuse to accompany him, but they also blame him for engaging in battle. The latter enters the arena while there is no hope of assistance from anyone. He enters the arena with a few sincere friends and with his family, including his wife, his sister, his nieces and nephews, his six-month-old son, and a few young members of his family, while his friends and supporters in Kufa refuse to accompany him. This is a strange event.
You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
A small village near Ramallah, 13 years old Amar Hamayel was more than a child. He was a rising star in Muay Thai, also known as Thai boxing. With a heart full of passion and fists trained for glory,